time period, what we're studying right now, really starting 2 weeks ago through the end of this quarter and then continuing on next quarter, is really the foundation of the rest of Israel's history. God is now giving his people his law and establishing them to really build towards Christ coming. And so that's really why this is so important to talk about over the next, the end of my quarter and then next quarter, finishing off the law. And so last quarter we talked through Moses' first 80 years of life. This quarter we've been on the journey with Israel, with starting with the Exodus. They are now have traveled to Mount Sinai. They've received the Ten Commandments, and along that way, they've been through some trials along that way. They've been tested by God. They have tested God, and they've been in kind of a few tough spots. So they had lack of food. They had lack of water. They grumbled and complained against Moses and against God. They fought their first war as a nation. But now they're at Mount Sinai. Moses is up on the mountain with God and receiving the law. And today we're going to continue studying through that law and the quote-unquote ordinances that God has, we started last week and God is delivering. And we're going to talk about some more property rights and responsibilities. We'll talk about being a good neighbor. And that's not State Farm's being a good neighbor. It's God's being a good neighbor. And taking advantage of people and how Israel is supposed to be before God. But before we get started, I forgot to ask, Rodney, would you lead us in prayer this morning? Thank you.
Dear Father God, we thank you for the blessing that we have this morning to be here together to look into your word, to learn about things that occurred back in for Christ and set the stage for your son to come for the better sacrifice. We thank you for each and every one here, the teachers, and the rest of you, them and their classes this morning. And we pray especially for those that want to be here this morning for whatever reason.
Amen. Thank you. All right. So last week I mentioned that we started the ordinances. So and so God laid out how he wants Israel to worship him, what they're not to make and what they are to make. They're supposed to make things out of earth that is God has created, not what man has done. We talked about the Hebrew slavery context and then what slavery would have looked like and God's rules and laws around that. And then we talked about just kind of starting more various laws. We talked about laws concerning the death penalty and discussed God's value of life and why he values that, because he has made man in his image. We'll continue to talk a little bit about that today. We talked about the context around eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, so on, life for life, how Israel would have known that by the time Jesus came, and then how, as a New Testament believer, how we should be looking at that and not seeking vengeance, but loving our enemies. Then we started in on kind of the property laws and property rights and how we should take care of what we have and take care of what other people have. Any comments on last week? Otherwise, we'll jump into our text for this week. All right, let's read our text for this morning. If a man steals an ox or a sheep and kills it or sells it, he shall pay 5 oxen for an ox and 4 sheep for a sheep. If a thief is found breaking in and is struck so that he dies, there shall be no guilt of bloodshed for him. If the sun has risen on him, he is guilty of bloodshed. He shall make restitution. If he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the stolen property is found in his hand alive, whether oxen, donkey, or sheep, he shall pay double. If a man causes a field or vineyard to be eaten by letting his animal loose, or it grazes in another man's field, he shall make restitution from the best of his own field and from the best of his own vineyard. If fire breaks out and catches in thorns so that shocks of grain or standing grain or a field are consumed, he who kindled the fire shall surely make restitution. If a man delivers to his neighbor money or goods to keep, and it is stolen out of the man's house, if the thief is found, he shall pay double. If the thief isn't found, then the master of the house shall come near to God to find out whether or not he has put his hand on his neighbor's goods. For every matter of trespass, whether it is for an ox, for donkey, for sheep, for clothing, for any kind of lost thing, by which one says, "This is mine," the cause of both parties shall come before God. He whom God condemns shall pay double to his neighbor. If a man delivers to his neighbor a donkey, an ox, a sheep, or any animal to keep, and it dies or is injured or driven away, no man seeing it, an oath of Yahweh shall be between them both. He who has not put his hand on his neighbor's good, and its owner shall accept it, and he shall not make restitution. But if it is stolen from him, the one who stole shall make restitution to its owner. If it is torn to pieces, let him bring it for evidence, for he shall not make good on that which was torn. If a man borrows anything from his neighbor, and it's injured or dies, its owner not being with it, he shall surely make restitution. If its owner is with it, he shall not make it good. If it is a leased thing, it came for its lease. If a man entices a virgin who isn't pledged to be married and lies with her, he shall surely pay a dowry for her to be his wife. If the father utterly refuses to give her to him, he shall pay money according to the dowry of virgins. You shall not allow sorceresses to live. Whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. He who sacrifices to any god except to Yahweh only shall be utterly destroyed. You shall not wrong an alien or oppress him, for you were aliens in the land of Egypt. You shall not take advantage of any widow or fatherless child. If you take advantage of them at all, they will If you take advantage of them at all, and they cry at all to me, I will surely hear their cry, and my wrath will grow hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. If you lend money to any of my people with you who are poor, you shall not be to him a creditor. You shall not charge him interest. If you take your neighbor's garment as collateral, you shall restore it to him before the sun goes down, for that is his only covering. It is his garment for his skin. What would he sleep in? It will happen when he cries to me that I will hear, for I am gracious. You shall not blaspheme God, nor curse a ruler of your people. You shall not delay to offer from your harvest or from the overflow of your presses. You shall give the firstborn of your sons to me. You shall do likewise of your cattle and of your sheep. It shall be with its mother 7 days, and then on the eighth day you shall give it to me. You shall be holy men to me. Therefore, you shall not eat meat, any meat that is torn by animals in the field. You shall cast it to the dogs. So as we kind of read through this, we kind of see various different laws coming up here. But let's start with maybe I read my question again this morning, and I read it differently than I wrote it. So how I wrote the question was, what are the penalties for theft and destruction of a field or vineyard? So if you read that differently, please give me a little grace there. So, penalties for theft or destruction of property. So, if an animal is stolen and it dies or it's sold, what's to be done? Yeah. So, 5 times the ox, 4 times the sheep. But if it's found alive, what's to happen? So I'm going to try to get through these pretty quick. I want to spend some more time on principle. Double, yeah, two times. So if the thief is caught in the act, what can be done? Think they have the right, the act of stealing, they have the right to defend their property. If he's struck and dies, there is no bloodshed. What did you take if he's not caught and he leaves and somebody pursues him? I think that's what it talks about. If the sun rises and whoever is stolen from seeks that out, there would be bloodshed on them, and then it would revert back to the laws of murder. You would be put to death. What if after the fact the thief is caught? What is he to do?
Full restitution. Yeah.
Pay back. Make restitution, and then two times. Like, revert back up. See above is how I read that. Is God saying, hey, caught, see above. Do that. And then if not, he can't pay it back. What's to happen to him?
He sold himself.
Yeah, he's sold into slavery. So kind of then see above. See the rules around slavery. All right, then let's talk about, so that's kind of animals. What about destruction of property? If something happens and property is destroyed, what if it's an animal that gets out and destroys a field? What's the owner to do?
Still repayment if I recall from his own.
Yeah, yeah, the best of his own. So it's... I'll get into that. So what if it's a fire? So I have a short story to share on this one, but thankfully I wasn't under the Old Testament. what about fire? What happens? Yeah. 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 Make restitution. So real short story. So last year, so Jill always gets frustrated because I like to do it on my own, but I burn off our pasture in the back. So, and I try to mow around it so it doesn't get out of control, but last year it did slightly get out of control. So I was able to salvage it, and I got it under control, but it did burn a little bit of our neighbor's pasture. So thankfully they don't use the pasture. It was a part that was overgrown with some weeds anyway, so it thankfully I didn't have to do anything or take care of anything. I got it back under control, but it jumped my fire line and got into their field. If you want more around that story, I was a little worked up. So how do I get this fire under control? Because once fire gets out in a field like that, it's, yeah. I was very close to calling the volunteer fire department. And so I was probably within 5 minutes. So and then my conclusion is, in this situation, if that owner is not able to repay, I think you revert back to, they would be sold into slavery. I don't know. It's not stated there, but I think we can make that application as if you are not able to pay, this is what happens. Because you have this debt hanging over you, and you either have to repay it or you have to go into servanthood to that person that you destroyed property of. Other thoughts on this before we jump into principles, Ben?
One thing, and we talked about this last quarter a little bit, like, we feel like this is super detailed, but imagine practically playing some of this out. Like, what is restitution? What's the best? What if I dispute that you gave me your best as part of the law? Like, there are details here that still have to be worked out. And so we get into, like, that's what we see some of traditions coming in on how to determine some of these practical details.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I got into it here. Yeah, I think it's the next one. We'll get into a little bit of that they're to go before God. Like, you have, like, God is an intermediary here in some of these circumstances. So, but yeah, there's so much behind this. What if my neighbor wasn't happy with what I did for them? Well, what do? We have to fill in those details, but God is laying out the framework here for sure. Other thoughts on these laws? Yeah, Jen? Yes. Yeah. So it would be indentured servanthood, I would call that. More like you are owned until that debt is paid off, or 7 years. Like that seventh year, you're set free. But year 1 through 6, I am, quote unquote, owned and used by that owner to pay off this debt. So, yeah. All right. So maybe where I want to spend a little more time talking through this, and the question is, based on those laws and those details, we can get bogged down in those, but where I want us to more sit is principles behind it. Like, what principles can we gain from this? Because I think this is where we apply it to us today. So what did you come up with around principles surrounding theft or destruction of property? Mason?
The basic thing that God wants repayment, and that isn't always something that can happen in perfectly just ways, but that is clearly what's being pointed at.
Yeah. Very steep penalties. Like, if you steal something 5 or 4 times, like if you have an ox, that's probably your livelihood, and if you steal somebody's, you have to pay them back 5. Like, it's a very steep penalty. Yeah. But yeah, restitution. Other thoughts? Other principles?
Intentions matter.
Yeah.
If it's unintentional, the penalty's different, but you're not off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's good. That's an interesting thing when you're trying to teach your kids. Just because something's an accident doesn't mean
that's a fantastic point, and one that I wanted to draw out too is the heart of both parties matter greatly in this. Is it's not just black and white, here's the law, check your box. God's after the heart. Great point, Stephanie. Mason?
I find all these challenging to read because of modern sensitivities, but not even that, just New Testament sensitivities.
Mm-hmm. Looking at me like, yeah. Yeah, Ben.
So just broadly, like, we see you break laws, you sin, there are consequences. There's discipline for actions taken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. So I'll put up just everything I So no specific order, but everything that we've said, and then something Anthony brought up last week is, like, modern day laws are have their roots right here with what God is laying out for his people. Like, you take a life, there's a steep and heavy penalty for that, and a lot of places have laws around you take a life, your life is going to be demanded still. And if you steal something, there's a steep penalty for that. And so all of these are very clearly laid out and a foundation for the rest of the world going forward. The accountable for damages, if you let your animal out or it gets loose or you let a fire go, it kind of goes back to what we talked about last week, and you're supposed to take care of what you have and take care of the things that are around you, take care of your property. And also, if I destroy something of someone else's, in Mark 12:31, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. If somebody does that to me, I'm going to want repayment for that. I lost something. Someone should do that. But God is clearly saying, hey, if you break these laws, there's a judgment for it, whatever it is. And we talked about all of that. And the last one is, this is a sinful world. Because of sin, God has to give all this. All of these are to act as a deterrent. It isn't, God lays these out to say, you know the rules. If you break them, you have a consequence. And so it's sin and evil hearts that cause all of this to occur. So, other thoughts? All right. So step into the neighborly aspect of it, being a neighbor to someone. And the way I read this, so the way my mind was thinking of it is almost I'm loaning or giving my property to my neighbor for safekeeping because I'm gone, or I may be putting my own current world in this because they were obviously a close people, but there's 2 million people, so there's obviously some things that go on. But property rights, if I lend something to my neighbor and it's stolen, what happens? What are they supposed to do? Yeah. So yeah, get together. Mason, do you have something? If I lose it, I go, oh, somebody else took it, and hide it. You can brush it under the rug, yeah? And so if they come together and they can't come to an agreement, what do they have to do? So I lended Mason my push broom. Yes. He loses it. Yeah, what if it's stolen? Yeah. But it's stolen. I trust Mason, but we can't come to an agreement on what should happen. And therefore, if we were Israel and Jews under the law, we would need to go before God, and he would act as our intermediary to determine guilt. Is Mason at fault, or are we good, and it's just lost property? If he's guilty, he has to pay me 2 push brooms. So I get a good deal out of that. I don't need 2 push brooms. But there is clearly a process to be followed in this. So what if it's an animal. So that's more stolen property. But what if an animal's lost or property is destroyed in some way on loan to my neighbor? What should I do then? What if no one sees it? Maybe I'll ask that question. No one's there to witness it. But no restitution if there's no fault. Yeah. But what if there, so how do you determine fault if no one sees it? Yeah, so there's a couple different situations here. So no witnesses, I think you have to go before God. No one saw it. God determines guilt in that situation, or I would assume they would cast lots. I did some reading around that. There would be a process to be followed. And then what Hannah said is no fault, no restitution. Accidents happen. Things happen with things. And so, but if there was fault, I didn't take care of it, and it got out or it got eaten because I didn't put it away at night, there would be fault. I did not take the necessary precautions. I am required to make restitution. And if it's destroyed and there's proof, accidents happen. Like animals destroy other animals by accident or because they want to eat things. But that happens in real life. So as a whole, the way I applied this is be a good neighbor. If you're a good neighbor, you're going to do all these things. You're going to take care of people's property. You're going to do what is right. If I do something to harm my neighbor, I'm going to make it right with them. And so, in a broad sense, just be a good neighbor. Yeah, Levi. I think if I inherently trust someone, why would I think that somebody destroyed my property on purpose? Whatever it may be. But yeah, I would assume it happened. Maybe not. Other thoughts? Yeah. I don't know off the top of my head. Yeah, Ben? Thoughts. Yeah, Mason.
I keep thinking of people later on when somebody's laws burn a field. Samson, you take something that's not yours. Ahab, Naamah. There's so much of this that we think, oh, this is what Israel. So this is what Israel did. Oh, so this is how Israel followed God. No, they usually didn't do any of this. Later, Pharisees, did it in a superficial way. But so much of the history, they weren't doing this, and they weren't doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was just all kinds of injustice and corruption.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Other thoughts? To me, a lot of this seems like common sense. Very common sense. If I'm at fault, I'm going to make it right. It seems right. But one thing that we've talked about in prior classes is think about where Israel is coming from. Israel is not coming from a place of privilege or I have plenty. I don't really, like, we live in a world where we have plenty. If I break something, I buy something new and fix it. They're coming from a world of slavery where they were beaten down, kept in very low living circumstances, and they leave as a rich people. They leave plundering Egypt. And so I think God is partially giving them some guidelines to live by, because I don't think they would have had these as we think of them as common sense, or I think of them as common sense. And it's basically, if you borrow something from someone, take care of it. If you break it, fix it. If you lose it, replace it. But that's not, I'm not sure Israel would have been in the same place where how I think of this today. But other thoughts surrounding this? All right. So we'll kind of look at, I put it as taking advantage of others, but God is, I think, broadening his law here. It's expanding the parameters of where he is, what he's doing, who he's including. Because I think up to this point, for the most part, there may have been a few other situations, but for the most part, it was usually one-to-one. My neighbor, I steal something from a person, I wrong an individual. It was typically one-to-one or family-to-family. This is now societal, more societal in nature. And then also some relationships between people and God. So what were some of your thoughts on God giving examples or God giving these laws surrounding taking advantage of others?
You shouldn't undo it.
Yeah.
God's gonna be angry with you.
Yeah, yeah. So God will hear their cry and take vengeance if you do. What else? What? Yeah, Mason.
Well,
other applications or things that you took away from this section of the law. Scott? We kind of get a glimpse into the character of God, what he expects of people as a whole. Great point. Yeah, Dakin.
Well, that question, me reading the signs of Levi, takes both halves of the situation, to be honest, forward, righteously.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the system will not work.
Yeah. And you have to have people who are enforcing the law that are trying to follow the law, which we get into in the New Testament of the Pharisees are not willing to even follow the law. So why would the people do it if your leaders are not? Yeah, great point.
Remember that when you're forgiven.
that's a fantastic point, is God is merciful, so therefore we should be merciful and forgiving. Clayton? So God lays out defiling another person. So the example of the virgin, defiling yourself as a sorceress, or defiling yourself as unnatural relations with animals. Like, there are consequences to all these. And those necessarily aren't, they are taking advantage of others, but then sin against God, the idea of sacrificing to other gods. So one thing I wanted to point out there was, when I was thinking through this, like, why is this here? And I don't know. This is a Chase Schroeder conclusion, so take that for whatever you will. In the Ten Commandments, this, you could perceive this as a loophole if you stretch it immensely. Because in the Ten Commandments, no other gods before me, no idols, shall not bow down and serve other gods. Well, I'm not gonna serve them. I'm just gonna sacrifice to them. I'm not having no other gods, but I'm gonna sacrifice to this god. I'm not gonna idolize them. I'm not gonna have them before God. I'm just gonna have a sacrifice to them. I think it could be perceived as a loophole. I think God is closing that down and then clarifying even further what he has already given in the Ten Commandments. Like, hey, not just this, but inclusively, I am God. I am the only one. There is nothing else you can do. Like, it is God and God alone. You shouldn't even be bowing down. You shouldn't have them as idols. You shouldn't be doing sacrifices, because you're going into a land where there's lots of idols. Don't acquiesce to the culture around you, and therefore there are no other gods before me. And I think that it's just a conclusion, maybe, or a wrapping up for God of that commandment or those commandments. The point Mason brought up is, like, remember, hey, you were just here. Less than 3 months ago, you were foreigners in a foreign land, being taken advantage of, being oppressed. Don't do that to others. Widows, fatherless, and the poor, is taking care of those who are in need. Those who have less, we should be taking care of, or they should be taken care of. And I think that principle applies to the New Testament also. And it's also those last two, God specifically calls out, if you do take advantage of them, I will hear them. I think there's an element of that omnipotent, omniscient God that hears, sees, and knows what we are doing, and it's our heart. Kind of back to points that were made earlier, that our heart matters in this. If I'm doing these things to kind of take advantage of those around me, God is going to know. God is going to take vengeance on that. And he will hear the cries of those around him. Other thoughts here before we we move on to that last question of what. So these are all the things that Israel are supposed to do, and then we'll talk about what they are to be, and talk just a little bit about that. So what is Israel to be? What is Israel to be to God?
Holy.
Holy, yeah. Holy, set apart. They are to be holy before God, which would be inclusive of what? What would they not do if they are holy before God? Crimes, yeah. Crimes.
Worship other gods.
Yeah. All those to not do. But so think about where Israel is in this journey. What have they been doing constantly? Like this whole trip out of Egypt into this place at Mount Sinai, what have they been doing?
Complaining
to Moses, complaining about God not providing them. I think that's why God's saying this. Like, hey, you're doing all of these things. Stop it. Just stop. Like, you shouldn't be blaspheming God. You shouldn't be testing God, nor cursing your rulers. Like, it's clear. Like, hey, Moses is your leader. Don't grumble and complain against him. Don't cause issues behind the scenes, because that's not what a holy nation does. And then, obviously, Israel has all of these things. They have livestock. They're going to go into a land where they're going to have fields and vineyards because God is giving them these laws. What are they to do as a holy nation to God? Yeah, I think that's very important, is the first. It's first animals, first of their crops, first the overflow of their wine presses, the first of their children, the first of everything. Everything is given to God first because he has done so much. And then obviously the holy men to God is they are to be holy, and this is what a holy people do. They follow all of those laws that God has given them, and then they do these things. All right. Thank you very much. I know law gets a little hairy sometimes, but and can be a little tedious, but we're going to approach the end of the law in summary. But I think as a universal principle, these are good to look to because we can apply these to our lives. So continue next week. Thank you very much.